of the show. If it's Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. We're on at an earlier time tonight due to a commitment I have this evening that I couldn't miss. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in early now, but of course the replays will always be on at 8 o'clock and throughout the week. Last week, we saw Gunrunner in a Tour de Force return, and we saw the races at Ascot. This week, England and Ohio are the strange pairs of cities that we look to for horse racing this week. I'm Bill Gottemer, and tonight my co-host will be Matt Pappas. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night, and we ask you to consider patronizing our sponsors, PassTheWire.com and Poppy's Place Restaurant in Floral Park near beautiful Belmont Park. As I said, this week I'm proud to be joined by Matt Pappas as my co-host. Hello, Matt.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, Matt, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me tonight.
I don't know if many of our listeners know much about you. We'll let you tell everybody about us a little bit, and we'll go over the news, and then we'll talk about some of the matters that you do in horse racing, and particularly the taste of Travers. At the outset, before we get started, we want to congratulate Jose Ortiz and Taylor Rice on the birth of their first child, Leilani. Matt, I don't know if you got an opportunity to see that picture on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw a few of them from both Jose and Taylor. Looks just like them.
I'd imagine that baby would be able to ride a horse in 15 or 16 years from now pretty well, I would hope.
Maybe in only 10 years even.
That's right. Taylor Rice, of course, a jockey in her own right, and Jose Ortiz, who's a big friend of the show. And another jockey news before we get started, and Matt, before we start speaking, we'll say Trevor McCarthy, again, another guest of our show and a friend of ours. He completed the first part of his recovery from that terrible spill that took place the day after the Preakness at Monmouth Park. And he suffered two pretty serious injuries. One was a badly broken finger and part of his hand, and the other was a separated shoulder that required surgery. The shoulder is going to keep him out much longer than the finger, but he completed the finger portion of his recovery and had his cast removed and the pins either reset or taken out. I'm not 100% sure which. But of course, we wish him the fastest of recoveries. Trevor's a good rider, a nice young man, and a good friend of the show. So we certainly hope he continues on that path. I think he'll be out another few months, though, with the shoulder injury.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know him very well, but just watching some of the racing down in Maryland, it seems like every day I'm watching, he's winning four or five races.
Yeah, he struggles with weight. He's a tall rider, and as was his father, Mike McCarthy. But he's just really pleasant, a good strong finisher, and it was just a shame that he got injured riding in Monmouth the day after the Preakness. Well, Matt, tell us a little bit about your interest in horse racing. I know you and I know each other for a couple of years now, and I know you have a really good opinion about horse racing matters. You speak on Twitter, you get into some lively debates, but tell us your background and how you got involved in the game and what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I grew up right around Saratoga Springs, New York, and my family's been in the ownership end of it for probably since the 1950s, so 60 so years now.
Okay.
Not as active now as they used to be in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. But now I can be seen at Saratoga most days, and I enjoy handicapping and working with some charities up in Saratoga, which we'll get into a little later. But I just love being around the track.
Did your family run under a stable name, or did they run in their own name?
It was under their own name. It was Saris. So probably if you saw any horse that was named with a Greek name that was running under Del Carroll back in the day, and then eventually when Del retired, they went to Pat Kelly.
Okay.
They all, from Alexandros to Katina to Thanasi X, they all had some sort of Greek spinoff on them for the most part.
Okay, that's great. Easy identification. And did your family breed their own horses or buy them at sales?
Yep, so they bred all of their own horses for probably about 40 of the years. When they first started out, it was more buying, but then when they were able to acquire mares and get breeding rights from their horses, they were breeding them, and they kept, I'd say, about 50% of them and sold the other 50%.
Okay. And so the Greek names were an easy identifier for fans and friends of the family, I guess, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, we're 100% Greek, so everybody knows if it's Saris and that's the horse, then it's us.
that's great. Well, I know you have a good opinion about things. I know you like to get into lively debates. Tell us what one of the big things that happened last week, you know, two comeback horses, right? Churchill Downs turned out to be a bit of a chalky night last Saturday night. I guess three odds on favorites, one in a row, or three odds on favorites, won the big race. But we had two horses who returned, and one was McCracken. And McCracken won after a bad start, but I wasn't all that impressed. Did you get an opportunity to see that race?
Yeah, I wasn't too impressed either. I mean, there wasn't much in the race. He was supposed to win. You know, he was 1-5. He did his job. But he's got to step forward. He just doesn't seem like he's progressed since back in the winter down in Tampa. But, you know, there's still time. Like last year at this time, most people probably didn't know who Arrogate was. So there's still time for him to develop and get better as we get into the summer up in Saratoga and the Haskell and those types of races.
Well, clearly, he has a little bit of McCracken. He has a popular name, so of course everybody likes that. And he had what appeared to be a style that would be conducive to stretching out, but I'm not 100% sure that he's not better going shorter than he is longer. It seems like his late rallies flatten out a little bit, as sometimes horses do when they're going further than a mile or further than a mile and a 16th. And you know, as you said, he did what he was supposed to do by beating that field, but it certainly didn't wow you any, and it didn't make you think he would be at the very top of the 3-year-old echelon anytime soon. But so maybe that's why they came back into Matt Wynn rather than chase some of the real big 3-year-old races. the other big return of the night was Gunrunner, though. So I mean, I think everyone knows by now Gunrunner won off easily and he set a track record and he looked like the easiest type of winner. What were your thoughts? Do you have any thoughts other than the obvious?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was funny. A lot of people on Twitter were commenting how if Julian sent Birdsong, it would have made a difference and the race was over from the start. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have won by 7, but he was still probably going to win the race. I don't think him not sending Birdsong impacted Gunrunner at all. He would have sat right off him and probably still won for fun like that. I mean, he set the track record. It wasn't like a close race, and maybe if he got worn down, it wasn't even going to be competitive.
Well, I mean, you bring up an issue which is debated a lot. I mean, I tend to agree with you on that Gunrunner was by far the best, and you know, if Julian Reparu's horse had gone with him, he probably would have tired off the board, finished off the board anyway. But that is a frustration. Well, that is a frustration that gamblers have. When you expect a horse to show speed and because they're facing somebody who's much superior, they decide to raid a jockey decides to raid a horse instead of running his best race. What are your thoughts on that?
To me, when I'm handicapping a race, I always look at the pace because pace makes the race. However, at the same time, I want who I think is the best horse in the race. Most times, I don't think horses get compromised by the pace. I think you want the horse that you think is going to be best, and you have to trust in your jockey that they're going to put them in the race, and they're going to read the form and know, oh, there's no pace today. Let me sit a length or two closer than we normally would. I mean, you see that many times in New York. They go slow, and the best rider wins the race. Javier's sitting a lot closer, or when Joel decides to be as good Joel, he's sitting there with the perfect trip, and these other guys are handing away races by sitting 10, 15 lengths off the pace because they didn't read the program that day.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it in big races, it's a double-edged sword, right? Sometimes when the purse is big, people take a chance at winning, and even if they try as hard as they possibly can, and you know if they're going to take down a big favorite, they try to take down a big favorite because there's a lot of money on the line. But sometimes there's so much money on the line that running second is good enough, and you don't want to compromise your chance running second by taking on a horse who's really, really, really difficult and to beat. And I got the sense with that race the other night that, you know, the connections of Julian Leperu's horse kind of conceded that Gunrunner loved that racetrack. Gunrunner was the best. Gunrunner was going to take the top spot, and they were trying to get as much as they could out of the purse without finishing out of the money. But I know it is a frustration for handicappers. Now, in Australia, and I believe in England, you have to declare your intentions of what you plan on doing in a race at times. And it's not all the time, but it is a thing where the stewards will call you in and ask your intention, whether you plan on running to the lead or whether you plan on coming from behind, which is completely foreign to our thought pattern here.
I would love to see that here and see what some of these guys have to say, because sometimes they don't even know when they break if they're what they're doing. You know, a lot of them get very open-ended instructions. See if this one goes. If this one goes, you go. Judge the pace the first quarter, and if it's a little bit slower, come 2-3 wide and try and engage. So that'd be a really interesting concept to have in America.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, plans in a race are a little bit like plans in war. They say in war the plan goes out the window when the first bullet is fired. But I guess a funnier example or a more lighthearted example was Mike Tyson, right? He said strategy is what everybody has until I punched him in the face. You know, so
yep.
So as you say, you know, when the gates open, and if you're left, you're left, and if you break running, sometimes you go on with it. But I don't know what to make of Gunrunner's race. I mean, he clearly loves that racetrack. He's won three times there. He's clearly among the best handicap horses. I don't know if he meets Arrogate again, whether the decision will be any different. It's hard to tell. He's a really nice horse. He's developed into a very nice 4-year-old, and he'll be a handful no matter who he runs against. But he's probably the second best horse in America behind Arrogate, I would guess.
And you know, it's going to be. He probably won't see him again until the Classic. Because I'm seeing Arrogate. They said I think was in San Diego, but the Classic and right into it. Saratoga.
Okay. I lost
you
a little bit.
Sorry about that. I think Gunrunner, you know, he's not going to see him till the Classic. He's going to be on the East Coast. He's going to go to Saratoga most likely for the Whitney, and then I know there's a prep down at Churchill. It slipped my mind.
Okay.
The one in the fall.
Right.
He'll
go. Gunrunner will go Whitney and one more at Churchill and then into the Classic. Maybe they'd go Woodward too if he runs well enough in the Whitney.
Yeah.
Now I guess there's still some talk that Arrogate may come east, although it would seem like it makes all the sense in the world to stay on the West Coast. But I know when we spoke to Mike Smith on the show here last week, he said he was hearing, too, that they were toying with the idea of running him at Saratoga because he ran so well last year at Saratoga.
Yeah, there was an article I saw on either Blood Horse or the Forum sometime last week, and they said that it's not out of the question, but it's more favorable he'd stay out west. The money's a lot better here, so maybe they can attract him. I mean, he's shipped all over the world and hasn't had an issue. So if it's $500,000 extra, why not come to Saratoga?
Well, there's also something to be said for never running in a race that has a purse of less than $1 million, I guess, right? For a while there, that's all he was thinking about. But speaking of travelers, let's change the subject a little bit. Early this week, the big action was at Ascot, Royal Ascot, the 5-day meet in London. That's known for Royal Ascot as Royal Ascot because the Queen participates, and it runs through Tuesday through Saturday. And so we're more than halfway through it now. And this year, it's on MSNBC for the first time, so you can catch all the races on Royal Ascot, and we had a lot of American participants. I'm sure you've heard of the results, but did you see any of the races at Ascot?
Yeah, you know, I watched all of Wesley Ward's races, and then I watched a few of the others. I saw Ribchester win, and I saw the Godolphin Parade on the first day. But, you know, it's great to see people like Stone Street and Barbara Banky win. They're just great people, and they're ambassadors of our game. They put so much money into the game. You have to win big races like that, or else you're going to get discouraged. And Lady Aurelia is just something special.
Right. So I guess for our listeners who may not be familiar with it, you know, Royal Ascot is the premier meet in England, and it was thought of that Americans' horses were inferior on the grass and that no one could come over there and from the U.S. and win a race. And Wesley Ward, the last few years, has successfully gone over there and won races. And that's encouraged other U.S. trainers to do the same. And last year, Tepin went over and won a race. And Wesley Ward continues. And as to our listeners from the show last week know, Graham Motion sent over Miss Temple City, and Todd Pletcher sent over American Patriot this year, as well as Mark Cassie and Wesley Ward, and I think Bill Mott sent a horse over too. So there's a healthy dose of Americans. Miss Temple City and American Patriot disappointed. In the first race of the meet, they lost to the horse you mentioned, Ribchester, who seems to be just a tremendous horse. Miss Temple City ran pretty well. American Patriot didn't seem to care for it and wasn't really a factor.
Yeah, you know, Ribchester, I think in the Longines World Rankings, the only horses ahead of him are Arrowgate, Winx, and he's either third or fourth. Gunrunner might be ahead of him, but he's either third or fourth. So, I mean, they went over there expecting to run well, but probably I can't see them expecting to beat that horse. He's one of the best turf horses in the world right now.
Right, and he showed it. He showed it on Tuesday. But the horse you did speak about, Wesley Ward, went over with Lady Aurelia, who had one prep here in the U.S. and won so easily, and she won at Ascot last year. And this year, she's a 3-year-old taking on colts and older colts in a Grade 1, and she lost her rider, Frankie Dettori, who was going to ride her, suffered an arm injury and missed the entire meet, and John Velazquez subbed for Frankie Dettori. And Lady Aurelia won by open lengths at a pretty short price, 2-1, paying only $6. Did you expect that type of effort from her, Matt?
Yeah, you know, Barbara's nephew, Nick, he's a good friend of mine, and I was talking to him in that morning, and when Frankie went down, they were a little concerned. We've said the same thing, you know, Johnny's a great rider and everything, but Johnny doesn't know that straight course like Frankie does. But they expected a good performance. I don't think I expected that good of a performance. I thought she'd be right on the wire, but she proved that she's just a special animal. She was getting 8 pounds as well, so take that into consideration.
Right, the scale for weights between the age and the gender difference got her 8 pounds on the weights. I guess Wesley Ward has said now that the Breeders' Cup turf sprint is the ultimate goal, so I'm sure she'll have a race between now and then, and it might be Saratoga, it might be out west. It'll be interesting to see where she goes. There was a huge debate last year about whether or not she should have been considered as 2-year-old filly of the year off of a win at Ascot as an American horse. And there was a kind of a raging debate on Twitter with people along ideological lines. No one doubted that she was the best 2-year-old filly, but they thought that maybe horses who raced primarily foreign or had their biggest accomplishments foreign, that shouldn't be taken into account for horse of the year or championship honors. Well, do you have any thoughts on that, Matt?
You know, I think she should have. I think she should have definitely been considered and probably gotten more votes. But the Eclipse, it's intended for the American horses. It's intended to be an American award. So I guess I don't think there was really a super horse in that division. And it's kind of proven that now. You know, you've had a bunch of different results. Abel Tasman is the one who stepped forward. But going into last year, I don't think you could say there was really one. It could have been even a shared award. I know it's not common, but that's something they do in other sports. That would have been what I would have done.
Right. I mean, I guess that's what led to the speculation that people looked towards Lady Aurelia, because she did, in fact, win in the U.S. and North America last year, to be more exact. She did win in North America, but her biggest accomplishment came in England. So I guess if she were to win the Breeders' Cup this year, that takes care of that. But going back to Ascot off of training in the U.S. and winning a race in the U.S., you know, we'll bring that discussion, and then winning at Ascot, we'll bring that theoretical debate up again, I guess, probably as, you know, for 3-year-old of the year, is depending upon how Abel Tasman and Unique Bella turn out.
Yeah, it'll probably be back real soon.
The second, Wesley Ward had a horse who ran second. The name escapes me right now on the second day. But then he followed up with a 20-1 shot, Conte Pierre Partino, who won a 20-1 and came from behind in a straight sprint race, which was really impressive to me that he managed to win that race. So Wesley Ward's hitting on all cylinders so far.
Yeah, the one that ran second was Happy Like a Fool.
Okay. And he was expected to run well and ran a decent second, but Conte Pierre Partiro was thought to be overmatched, and meanwhile scored at 20-1. So Wesley clearly proving that he's figured out how to ship to Ascot with not just one horse but a whole bunch of horses who can run big.
Yeah, Conte Partiro, I think, lost at Belmont in the Soaring Softly Stakes to Morticia, finished fourth in the race, and then came back and won over there and paid $40.
Yeah, just too funny. With that, let's finish up with Ascot so far. I guess Highland Real came back and won a race. Highland Real, who won the Breeders' Cup Turf Classic last year and went wire to wire with such an impressive win this year over Flintshire. This year came back now and won again at Ascot, a little different style, came from a little bit off the pace, but managed to grind out a win and really has become a bit of a horse that wins no matter where he runs.
Yeah, that horse, I mean, I'm a big fan of that horse. He runs everywhere. Like you're saying, he ran in Hong Kong and was just beaten there. He ran in the Breeders' Cup, obviously, and won there. He's run in England a few times, so it's just a good horse to have around. I hope he's not done for a long time.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's fun. Well, Matt, at this point, we're going to take a little break here. We followed up what took place last week. What I want to do is I want to thank, as I always do, thank our guests from last week. And of course, they were all generous with their time. We had a stellar lineup last week. Matt, not to take away your star power, but the star power we had last week in the game after the Belmont with Todd Pletcher, Graham Motion, Mike Smith, and Jose Ortiz was something I was really proud of that we had. We had all of them on to discuss their Belmont and Belmont Day exploits and what they were doing this week. So thank you to all of them. before we start speaking about this week, Matt, tell us a little bit about your endeavor, which is the Taste of Travers, which I think is in its second year now or is its third year. Tell us a little bit about that project.
So it's the second year of the event. A little background on it. Last year, the McNeary family, which is a local family in Saratoga, they came to the Saratoga Senior Center, which I'm a board member of, and they basically asked us if we would run an event for them that they underwrote and all the proceeds would go to us. Well, excuse me, honoring the Travers winner. So last year it was Keen Ice, and we honored him, and the proceeds went back to the senior center. And we didn't have too many national sponsors, but we did have NBC there, and they gave us a little shout-out on Travers Day. But this year we're going to have a lot more national sponsors involved. I can't say who yet.
Okay.
But we've got a lot of great support. You know, last year our honorary committee had Graham, which you mentioned, Mark Henning, Kieran, just a whole bunch of people. And this year we've already pulled in Herringswell, Godolphin, Shadwell, just to name Todd Pletcher, just to name a few. So we've got tremendous support from the horsemen. And that event's hosted at the Dance Museum the night before the Travers. So this year it'll be August 25th. And it's a great time. You know, we have a party, food, open bar. And this year we're hoping to get a musical act as well. So we have a local band that plays, but we're hoping to get a bigger name to come in as well.
Okay, so this is the night before the Travers Eve, and you honor the Travers winner from the year before, and it's at the Museum of Dance, right in Saratoga, next to Saratoga Performing Arts Center. The Museum of Dance is something that horse players probably haven't seen often, but they should go see. It's another one of Saratoga's kind of unknown charms, right?
Yeah, it was my first time in it last year when we had the event. And I've grown up right here.
Yeah, I think it's like anything else. You if you're focused on one thing, you're not focused on something else, right? But you do have, when you get closer, we'll post all the information. But there's different tiers and different packages. And what struck me about it, which was great, was unlike a lot of fundraising events, it's affordable for people who aren't particularly well heeled. I mean, you can go and participate in it for a relatively modest cost, or you can take additional packages that get you additional amenities that go way up and help raise the money that you're seeking to raise. I mean, last year I think the smallest entrance fee was $25 or $30. Do I have that right?
No, last year was about $120.
Oh, was it? Okay. I guess maybe I thought that was affordable compared to some of the other things that go on in town.
But if you're going to go out to eat at a Sperry's or a 15 Church up here the night before Travers, you're going to pay $50 for your meal. You get a bottle of wine. You have an appetizer or dessert. All of a sudden, you're looking at a $100 meal anyway. This, you can come and have as much food and much drink as you want and support a nice charity.
Right. And one of the things we've seen for racing fans, one of the things we've seen is how absolutely approachable racing personalities are for the most part. We with the guests we have on this show, it's just a matter of, speaking to them and explaining them to who you are. And at that night, at an event like that, I'm sure they're all approachable, and you have a good, real, heavy conversation with anybody you want at that dinner.
Oh yeah, they're great. Last year we actually had Bruno DiGiulio do a little handicapping seminar, and he was calling people out that were in the crowd, and they were waving, and then 5 or 6 minutes later you'd see people going over and talking to them about whatever, the races, what they thought of their horses, just to say hello and introduce themselves.
Yeah, no, it's just a great event, and we'll keep highlighting it as we get closer. Let's talk a little bit about this week. Every week can't be star-studded in the racing world, although it seems like we do this show every week, and every week there's something really interesting to talk about. This week's racing is a little bit slow. But I guess there's sort of three cards we want to highlight a little bit, and you and I have spoken a little bit about some of the races that are coming up, and I guess it runs, we'll go from east to west. You have Belmont, you have Thistle Downs with the Ohio Derby, and then out to Santa Anita. I don't know if you had an opportunity to take a look at the entries for Saturday, but there's three horses that catch my interest on Saturday.
Yeah, I know we mentioned we can just run through the each of the races that you sent me, if that works.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's great. So we'll let's work through Belmont, and I'm going to focus on race six, which is a horse that's a classic money burner, right? Switzerland.
Yeah, you know, Switzerland. I was there his second race down at Keeneland, and that race came back very strong. I mean, Marshall Plan didn't win, but he ran a good second on the Belmont Friday card, and Giuseppe the Great came back and ran second in the Woody Stevens off his win at Keeneland. I was looking for an alternative in that race, and the only one I think I could find was Mark Cassie's horse on the outside. Looked to have some fast works. There wasn't much in here, and it was interesting. Irad never jumps off a Rudy, especially one that ran second to take a first-time starter, so I got to think that horse is live.
Right. Well, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the term, you know, a money burner is exactly what what it sounds like. It's a horse who's heavily favored and loses and causes a lot of ripped up tickets. So Switzerland for Chad Brown, the Spikestown Colt, was highly touted and came to the races for the first time in February down at Gulfstream and was 2-5, and ran very, very well. Kind of, in my opinion, maybe got herded a little bit by the horse on the lead, and the next thing you know, he was beaten a length. With that, as Matt spoke about, they regrouped and they showed up at Keeneland going 6.5 furlongs, and he was 4-5 that day, and he ran lights out, I thought. As Matt indicated, Marshall Plan was a first-time starter from Kieran McLaughlin in Stone Street, and he just ran a huge early fast times along with Switzerland, and both of them looked like they were going to draw away from the field, and both of them stopped within the last 16th of a mile to be caught by a horse called Giuseppe the Great, who went on and ran well since, as has Marshall Plan. So with all that information, when Chad Brown showed up with Switzerland back at Belmont Park, he was again 2-5, and that race was horrible. Everything went wrong. The race was track was sloppy, even though he's bred for the slop. It didn't seem like he cared for it. He stumbled coming out and slipped at the start and was never a factor. So now Switzerland has been odds-on favorite 3 straight times, and it looks like he's 8-5 in the morning line. My guess is he'll be odds-on again. Matt, do you get a sense that
yeah,
people will get off him now?
There's just not much else in here, you know. The ones that have ran haven't run big numbers or anything, so I just don't know where else I would go if I was betting the race or making the odds for the race. I'd probably say he probably has to be somewhere around 6-5 at the most going off.
Yeah, I tend to. So I guess this is the classic thing for gamblers, right? You know, if he wins – If he wins and you don't bet him, you feel stupid because he's shown talent, superior talent, in 2 out of 3 races, and he had an excuse in his last race. And he's been bet so heavily that you got to figure that somebody really likes what he's doing in the morning. On the other hand, if you bet him at short price and he loses again, you bang your head against the wall and say, this is the fourth time I've done this now, and, you know, when am I going to learn? So it's always kind of interesting when you see that. I'm not sure what I'm recommending other than to watch it. And I'm still think that Switzerland may eventually become a really nice sprinter, and is probably has some interest on the card in the 6th race on Saturday. So that would be Switzerland. One horse is going to get a tremendous amount of attention is in the 8th race on Belmont on Saturday, and that's a horse called Rubalinda, and Rubalinda had this tremendous debut. It's a Chad Brown trained horse. It's a 3-year-old filly trained by Chad Brown, owned by Don Alberto Stable, who owns Unique Bella. But most importantly, it's one of the first. I think it was the first. Could it be the first? I thought it was one of the first horses sired by Frankel, the tremendous European horse, to run in the U.S. And he for 3 quarters of the race or more, she looked like she was going to be distanced. And then once she kicked into gear, she had a tremendous turn of foot and won as easy as can be. Your thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, I think it was actually the first winner bred by Frankel in America, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
It was.
Okay.
I mean, I think the horse is going to be tough, but these horses stretching out, they do get beat sometimes, and they usually get beat at really short prices. The other horse I'd give a shot is Kieran's Talakoi. She overcame a really bad trip at Keeneland, or she had a really bad trip at Keeneland, and she came back and won at Belmont with no pace, and I think she has a bright future as well. So I think that would be my alternative, but Rubelinda is going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an easy field. This is a stakes field, you know, granted a restricted stake, a short stake for $100,000, but Claiborne Farm and Christopher Clement have Lull in there, and Lull is a nice horse. Jimmy Toner, who seems to be winning with everything right now, has a beautifully bred horse in Bellevue. And, you know, this is a wild step up for Rubelinda, but she did was win a maiden race, and it's hard for me to tell whether that turn of foot at the end was as impressive as people thought it was or whether it was an optical illusion. Sometimes you run past tired horses, you look like the a world beater, and I still haven't made up my mind on this horse.
Yeah, me either. I'll be looking more, but I think I'll probably use one other with her and hope she gets beat by that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it will be interesting, and the horse has a lot of fanfare. So take a look at Rubelinda, not necessarily to bet it, but take a look at it. Speaking of Frankel sired a horse today who won at Ascot. I can't remember which one it was, but they were excited to have a Frankel sired horse, follow through and carry on the legacy at Ascot. So I would imagine that the Frankels are going to be pretty good as time goes on.
Yeah. Definitely.
The only other horse that we focus on at Belmont, and I'm sure there's others, but the only ones that caught my eye is in the ninth race, and that's Paul Pomper, the owner. Paul Pomper, another horse with Chad Brown, has a horse called Converge, and Converge was a nice horse last year as a 3-year-old, and came back as a 4-year-old and won, I thought, pretty nicely on the grass. A lower level allowance race, but more importantly, it seems like everything Paul Pomper owns right now wins. So no matter who his trainer is, he seems to win. And Converge could be, to coin a phrase, on the verge of stepping into stakes company with Javier Castellano, and that's the ninth race at Belmont. It's another allowance race. And I guess through the conditions, he's able to enter, even though he won the race before, because it's open company, not state breds. So he's kind of staying within his conditions there, and Converge might be a horse that, like many other Chad Browns, just keeps getting better.
Yeah, you know, the only other one I wanted to give a shot in there, other than the other Chad Brown as well, was Altar Boy. His last race he ran was when he really needed to be on the lead at Belmont, and he had so much to do, and then he just missed by a neck. So I think he could be used.
Yeah,
he
lost to a nice horse, too. He lost to Closing Bell. That's Bill Mott's horse. It was a really nice horse. It'll be interesting. I mean, it's a mile and a quarter, which Converge hasn't yet done, and not particularly bred for it. But again, Chad Brown seems to know what he's doing. It hits on all cylinders. I'm sure there's others, but those are the three that caught my eye at Belmont. Doing the unusual thing of looking at Thistle Down in Ohio for the first time. It's the Ohio Derby, and a couple of horses we wanted to talk about to bring to people's attention if they had a want to look around for horses that they've known. And there's really one on the undercard, and then there's the Ohio Derby. On the undercard, the fifth race at Thistledown is a horse called Buckeye Bullet, and Buckeye, of course, being the name of the Ohio Iowa State Buckeyes, and all things holy to people in Ohio is Ohio State football, right? Buckeye Bullet has turned the corner this year and it stayed completely in Ohio. He's an Ohio bred, and he's 4-for-4 at short odds. When you take a look at the racing form, his last four races, he was 1-2, 1-2, 2-5, 2-5, and before that he was 4-5, and he won two times before that at 4-5. So he's just become a really good Ohio bred sprinter. Excuse me, seems to be just picking up the money at these Ohio tracks. Tries to stretch out from 6 furlongs to 1 1/8 miles, which is quite a stretch out. But goes for $75,000 in what's the George Lewis Memorial. I'm interested to see how much he'll be played, and I'm interested to see how far he'll carry his speed.
Yeah, the only other horse I could make a case for in there was 8 the Hard Way. He's proven at the distance and over the track. He's been in the try 5 of his 10 attempts. But Buckeye Bullet stretching out. We'll see if he can get it done. I mean, he'll probably be, 3, 4 to 5 in there. So I don't know if I would take that on.
Yeah, that's what's puzzling to me. He's 2-1 in the morning line, but I think with all those wins in a row, I think you're right. He'll probably be odds on. And 8 the Hard Way wasn't that far behind him at 6 furlongs, and he seems to want to stretch out much more than Buckeye Bullet does. So 8 the Hard Way may get the better of him. Again, just more of an interesting than anything. But the big race of the week, we would say, would be the Ohio Derby. And the Ohio Derby is a race that's gotten some horses have gotten a pretty good start there and have gone on to become really good 3-year-olds in the second half of the year. I mean, the Ohio Derby is one of the lesser derbies, so to speak. It's a Grade 3, but the purse is $500,000, and for once during the year, Thistledown becomes the centerpiece, and there's a lot of familiar names in that race. What did you see in there, Matt?
I liked Untrapped. I thought, his Derby trip was bad and his Arkansas Derby trip was bad. There's enough speed in here for him, but he does still have tactical speed. However, they got to beat Gervin if he's healthy. He didn't sound going into the Derby, so I'd like to see him get back to form, because going into the Derby, he was one of the only consistent 3-year-olds we had. So I think it'd be nice to see him get back, but I don't really have a strong opinion on the race, but I would definitely use Untrapped if he's going to be 5-1, and the others, Gervin and IRAP, are going to be 3-1 or 5-2, somewhere around there.
Right. Well, there are some familiar names, as you pointed out here. So people who watch the Kentucky Derby preliminaries and will notice IRAP, who won the Bluegrass, which I've pretty much concluded was a phony race, phony in the sense that it doesn't really tell anything, because they went even splits, 24-second quarters throughout the entire race, and IRAP just loped along on the lead. But the IRAP, like the others, didn't run a step in the Derby, whether it be the pace or the trip or the wet track. But IRAP comes back for Doug O'Neill. Untrapped for Steve Asmussen, who Matt says is prior to the Kentucky Derby had been there every dance, and then Gervin, who for a lot of people was the wise guy horse going into the Belmont, going into the Derby rather, but he had hoof trouble and couldn't really train up perfectly, and he had a rough trip too. So you have Mike Smith back with him. And then you layer on top of all that, you have an entry of horses who are long shots. It's a 3-horse entry. You don't see too many of those any longer. But by Luch Racing Stable. Luch Racing Stable is pretty well known by a lot of people, but they do focus about on Ohio breds, and this is, for lack of a better term, this is their Breeders' Cup Classic. So, there's a lot of interest in this race, and I guess you figure IRAP will try to go to the lead if one of the Luch horses doesn't, and Gervin is professional, and Untrapped, as Matt says, is is a nice horse for Steve Asmussen, and it's $500,000 on the line, so it's you know, figures to be interesting and hard fought. So if you don't watch Thistle Downs, this may be the week to actually look at it. The only other thing I see on the racing week, and we haven't gotten Sunday's cards yet, but for Saturday at least, is Santa Anita. And Santa Anita, there's two big races out there, and one of them is the Affirmed, named after the great Triple Crown winner, and Battle of Midway for Jerry Hollendorfer seems to be the star of that race, right?
Yeah, that horse, I always thought a mile and a 16th was right up his alley. But I did read they were using it as a prep to the Haskell. The only other horse that was a little interested in there is Arms Runner. Not to bet, I just want to see him run. I don't know why he's getting on the dirt after those two amazing efforts on the turf. But they must think he's something special if they're maybe trying to go like Affirmed and then get in the three-year-old stakes.
Yeah, I mean that is a little odd. I mean it may be just as simple as getting hustled into the race. It's a 5-horse race for $100,000, and you're right. He should have stayed on the grass, you would think. But it's an opportunity to maybe to get some black type and to pick up part of a purse. A Battle of Midway will be odds on. He's run well every single time. And again, Jerry Hollendorfer is just tremendous in these type of races. But they are using it as a prep for the Haskell, but we'll see how well he runs. Let's hope he shows his promise. The only other race is the sixth race. And the sixth race, again, plagued by a small field. California just can't seem to hold on to horses right away. They have a 5-horse field right now, but two of them are trained by Bob Baffert, and most people expect he'll scratch one, probably scratch Catburger. And the other horses, it's Collected, who's yet another Bob Baffert 4-year-old who is really good and has come back better than ever. Figures to be super odds on. He's 4-5 in the morning line, but my guess is he'll be 2-5. And he faces a horse from Argentina making his first start for Doug O'Neill. Another horse for Doug O'Neill, Donworth, who they paid so much money for last year at auction, and then managed not to really get anything out of, and they laid him up for over a year. And it's hard to make of anything out of that race. Did you take a look at that at all?
Yeah, I kind of liked Collected. Like you said, he's probably going to scratch. So the other Baffert, not Collected. I liked Cat Burglar, but he's probably going to scratch. So the other Baffert, Collected, will probably be tough to beat with that scratch. He loves the surface. And he's got the tactical speed. If Caprogler was in the race, I think he'd be alone on the lead and maybe good enough to take him. But without him in there, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see which way they decide to go. But again, it's only 100,000. There are some pretty big names there. You know, Bob Baffert running this horse for 100,000 is a little odd because he probably could pick a bigger race. Donworth was sold. I think he was sold at auction for $500,000. He's the best-looking horse you've ever seen. Graham Motion had him for a while, and he's frustrating because he showed flashes of brilliance but never really followed through on it. Now he's a 5-year-old. He's still a full horse. He hasn't been gelded. It'll be interesting to see how interested he is in coming back to the races.
Yeah, he's a money burner, too. He always runs those big numbers, and then everybody gets excited. Oh, next time he's going to finish the deal. But he just always finds a way to not have that be the next time. I think he's been less than 5-2 in 7 of his 9 starts. And one of
right.
them he was 1-9 he won. And first out, I think he was 12-15-1 morning line. And everybody knew at Gulfstream he went off 8-5, 9-5.
Right.
And those were his two wins.
Well, he's just so good looking. I mean, he's a perfect equine specimen. You just to look at him, I can understand why you would buy him at auction. I can understand why you would be enamored of him. It'll be interesting if 5-year-old full horses who have not been gelded get a little dicey trying to come back to top form because their body's telling them it's time to do something else rather than run hard. So it'll be interesting to see how well he comes back, if at all. The horse, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Precisionist. The name of the race is the Precisionist. Precisionist was a was a great horse owned by Fred W. Hooper, and he won it almost any distance. I think I remember him winning the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and then he also won it a mile and an eighth. So he was just a versatile horse and a really hard hitter. I don't know, Matt, you may be too young to remember Precisionist.
Yeah, I can't say I do remember him. I'm only 27, so.
Yes, that'd be a lie if you remembered him. But Precisionist was owned by Fred W. Hooper, who had, and I don't know if you know this, Fred W. Hooper, the first horse he ever purchased, won the Kentucky Derby, a horse named Hoop Jr. So that's, you know, that's in the category of what do you do to top this? You know, he bought a horse named it after himself and won the Kentucky Derby with it, and I guess probably concluded it was an easy game. But I think he learned more over the years. He was in the game for, I think, 5 decades, and mostly on the West Coast. But Precisionist was one of the first horses that kind of traveled pretty regularly, and he won a Breeders' Cup at Aqueduct, if I'm not mistaken, at a sprint distance, even though he was a distance horse. So it's nice to have that horse remembered. California continues to be plagued by these short fields. I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, they canceled all their Thursday cards too now. So, I mean, they're finally getting 10 horse cards on Fridays or 10 race cards on Fridays. But I don't know. It might be a while before they fix it. At least they're off to Los Alamitos, so nobody will really pay attention once they go there in the break until Del Mar.
Well, we laughed a little bit today. You know, we saw one of the races at Ascot, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was one of the sprint races, and it was won by the horse number 32, you know, which is completely foreign.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I was saying that to my dad the other day. You know, I know it's a lot more money, but they can get 25, 30 horses to come compete with the whole concept that you have a chance to win. How come you can't get even 7 horses, 8 horses at Santa Anita and some of these races?
Yeah, there's just a lot going on over there that needs to be repaired, and it's a shame because you can't keep running. Even when you see a 5-horse stake race and you see 2 horses are trained by one trainer, 2 horses are trained by the other, and right away you suspect that someone is gonna one or both of them is gonna scratch, and you'll be left with another three horse field or a 4-horse field. It's just not a good product, and it's something that has to be has to be addressed before too long.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little early. We don't have the opportunity to really talk about the Sunday card at Belmont, but the entries are out, and our friends at Zilla have a couple of horses in there, so we always root for them. They're so happy to listen to the show, and so happy whenever we see them. They give me good, nice comments on all we do here, so we always wish them well. And there's a couple of nice allowance races, but again, this is kind of a dull week as far as big races go. They all can't be diamonds, right?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at Sunday yet, but it's always a nice little time between Belmont Week and Saratoga. Get a little break, catch your breath before you get hit every weekend between Saratoga and Del Mar.
Right. Well, you know, I don't want to go too long. As I said before, I have a commitment, a sad commitment I have to keep tonight. So maybe we'll only go an hour tonight. We have a few more minutes left. You and I spoke a little bit about how, or we texted a little bit about how Saratoga is heating up now, where the Oklahoma training track is getting more and more activity each morning. Is that palpable? Can you feel it in the town?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was at, it was either National or Lake Local or one of those places even like last weekend, and I heard people talking, oh, it's only 34 days now. Oh, it's only 33 days. It's good to hear because, you know, that time of year, everybody that I grew up with and stuff and have known for years are in town. So it's nice to get a whole bunch of friends in town for 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's you know, a lot of excitement. And again, the fact that the horses are training at Oklahoma training track just you know, makes it all that. I mean, I know this horse is up to year round, but when the activity starts really increasing, it's a lot of excitement and it's fun.
You know, Chad Brown probably has 150 horses here, if I had to just take a rough estimate. He I know my cousin, he's a chiropractor for people around the track, and he was telling me that the numbers he heard were 150 here, 50 in at Belmont, and 30 in Delaware or somewhere out that Delaware or Park, somewhere out there he was stabling more. I was up there last Friday, Saturday, and I saw probably 50 to 70 gallopers for Chad within an hour.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's different. I mean, in the old days, I think 40 was the limit. You know, they wouldn't allow it. And now super stables are kind of the rule rather than the, exception.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see some smaller stables win, you know. I mean, guys like Christoph and Kieran and Mark Henning and those type of guys that still have top-class horses, but they only have 40 horses. I like that type of barn if I'm an owner, because sometimes you get lost in the mix if you're with Chad and you're not Martin Schwartz or Klarovich or one of those guys. You know, if you have 40 horses with him, he's your top priority. But if you have one, less than one's a superstar, sometimes you might not get all the attention.
Right. Well, it's changed so much. I mean, the throwback is Chuck McGahee. Chuck McGahee training primarily for the Phipps family and related parties. Right. He may have a handful of others for other people, but for the most part, he's their private trainer. You know, that used to be the way it went. That was more common than anything else. Alan Jerkins with Hobo Farm and Mac Miller with Rokeby Stable. That used to be kind of the way they went about it. But now these super bonds are hard. It's a big advantage. I guess they know very well where their horses should be placed because they know how to compare them against their own horses in the morning workouts.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at actually numbers from last year who Baffert ran, the amount of horses, and comparing them to Chad and Todd and Asmussen on the East Coast. He ran significantly less horses, and he was only off Chad and Todd by 3-4 million. Obviously, Arrowgate played a big role in that.
Right.
But still, you know, he's running a lot less horses, but he knows exactly where to place them. You don't see many Bob Baffert show up and run off the board unless it's, you know, a maiden or a second time starter or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I know. He's deadly shipping in, and I guess the last week at Belmont proved it more than anything. That, no question about that.
I said he was going to have a big weekend, but I expected maybe two. I liked American Anthem and one other, I forget which one of them that he had. Oh, West Coast. And then the other two I thought were in more competitive races. But, I mean, they all won by five. It was, you know, it wasn't like one got their nose down to get him the four. He won in open lanes.
Right, right. Just an amazing, amazing performance. Well, with that, I'm looking at the television. I see the jockey standings in New York. It's Irad and Jose Ortiz on top of the board, separated by one win. And it's far back to the third place finisher. So the Ortiz brothers continue to dominate New York racing right now, and we'll have to see whether that continues through the rest of the Belmont meet and up into Saratoga. But you know, exciting times ahead for New York racing and leading up ourselves up to Saratoga.
Yeah, it should be a fun summer up here.
Yeah. Well, with that, Matt, we finished an hour. We normally go 2 hours, but as I said, I have something to do tonight. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. Your insight is always welcome, and please come back anytime. We'll stay in touch. We'll have you make your as much a regular as we can. Where can people find some of your selections and some of your writings on the internet or various places if they want to follow you?
So all of my writings are on againstthenumber.com. Which is a website based out of Vegas, and trackside view.com.
Okay, hold on. It's Against the Number. That's singular. Against the number dot com. Okay.
Yep.
Against the number dot com. And what was the other one? I'm sorry.
Trackside view.com.
Okay, excellent. And I know you put together various writings and selections and the like, and your insight is, you know the game, no question about it. So we're happy to have you on, and look forward to getting together with you when we're up there. And certainly, and one of the things I do want to mention is the Racetrack is going to have a race named after it on the first Saturday at Saratoga.
Great.
Yeah, so please be prepared to come down into the winner's circle with us and hand out the trophy to whoever the winning jockey is. And we'll have other listeners and other participants down there. And we don't know the race yet, but it's going to be late on the card in case people are coming from New York or in case people are taking their time getting to the races from being out the night before. But it's that opening Saturday. So that was generously donated by one of our listeners who thought it might be a nice opportunity for Racetrackers to get get some more publicity and just to kind of have an opportunity to mingle with listeners and some of the participants on the show. So mark that on your calendar. And please, share this link generously. It's on at a weird time tonight, but I'm sure people will listen to it at the normal time and catch it. So with that, Matt, I think I'll play the song and we'll be out.
Sounds good. Have a nice night.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thank you.
Tracker.